everyone. Welcome to the Coaches on the Run podcast.
This is Alex.
And Alyssa.
We're both full-time coaches, and we're here to answer your common and not-so-common trail and ultra questions.
Hi, I'm Gina. I'm a soon-to-be registered dietitian. I am a fitness enthusiast, did CrossFit for a million years, just trained for my first marathon, and now I'm training for my first half Ironman. So, learning how to use food for fuel has been really important for me throughout my entire life.
Awesome. Well, Gina, this has been, I feel like, a long time coming. I'm super excited to talk to you. So one quick thing, Alex is not able to join us today, but Gina is my cousin-in-law. So this is a really exciting conversation. And Gina has so much insight. She has one of my favorite nutrition Instagram accounts to follow. So really excited to get into this conversation and happy to have you with us.
I'm excited too.
So expanding a little bit, what is your background in fitness and how did you go down the path of becoming a nutritionist?
So I've been active my whole life. In high school, I played sports, I did track and I did soccer. Went to college, found CrossFit, where I did CrossFit for, I think, 8 years. I got my level one coaching certification, so I coached CrossFit for 2 years. And then my body just kind of was done with CrossFit. It's really hard on the body. So I just kind of switched over to just traditional weightlifting and found, like, new things to do. So as you know, I just trained for my first marathon, which was 6 months ago. I had a blast training for it, 26 weeks, and it was just like the best experience ever. So in the middle of my marathon training, I thought it was a genius idea to sign up for a half Ironman. So I'm now, after taking like 5 months off of running or any kind of that kind of training, I'm in like my second or third week of starting to train for my half Ironman. So I always just love finding new ways to challenge myself. I love training for things. When I was doing CrossFit, I would do CrossFit competitions all the time. I really love having something, you know, that I can see that I can train for.
That's awesome. And then how did this fitness background, I think I've heard a little bit of this story, but I'd love you to expand on it. How did that then translate into, I want to be a nutritionist?
So when I first graduated from college in 2014, I graduated with a degree in psychology. And I was like, I have no idea what I want to do. So I just kind of bounced around. I thought about physical therapy. I thought about nursing. I knew it was going to be something in the healthcare field. And I kind of gravitated a little towards physical therapy because it was, you know, like physical and dealing with athletes and working with athletes. So I started working in a physical therapist's office and I just found that it was just very redundant and it was just not for me. Physical therapy is not for me. So actually, while I was taking my prereqs for physical therapy, I decided to, instead of just take prereqs at a school, I decided to get a nutrition degree while taking the physical therapy prereqs because I figure I may as well get some degree out of this. And I ended up just falling in love with all the nutrition classes. And I was like, screw physical therapy, I want to do nutrition. So it was the first time ever that I actually enjoyed school. I've like hated school since I was a kid. And going back to school and doing nutrition, like I was excited to study for exams. I was like, what is happening to me? But that just confirmed to me that like I was in the right field working in nutrition. It's so fascinating. I could talk about it for hours.
That's awesome. Also, you sound exactly like your cousin who hates school. But I do think when you find the right thing, it's like, wait a second, I get to do this and help people and make a difference.
Definitely.
So that kind of leads me. I think, and this is why I love your Instagram, is you're constantly like debunking things. But what is the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian? And what should someone look for when they are seeking help? Because I think this is food is something that seems like we should know what to do and we do not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. So the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian, literally anybody can call themselves a nutritionist. Someone can take a week-long course and they are a nutritionist. Whereas a dietitian, a registered dietitian, you have to go through a 4-year undergraduate degree in nutrition and dietetics, which is composed of a science heavy degree. You're taking chemistry. Ask Cody. I struggled with chemistry, but it was worth it. You have to take chemistry, biochemistry, organic chemistry, anatomy, physiology, microbiology, a lot of science classes, because you have to learn how the human body works. Nutrition is science. You need to understand the processes in the body for nutrition. So after the 4-year bachelor's degree, you then go on to a 1200 hour, it's usually 9 months, it's usually 8 to 10 months, dietetic internship. So the internship is very competitive. You can apply to as many as you want, but you will only get matched to one. You don't get into multiple internships. It's like this computer matching system. And if you get matched, you get matched to one internship, where then it's 1200 hours and you're working in different rotations of nutrition. So you're working clinical, you're working food service, you're working community. The internship that I'm doing, there's a sports nutrition concentration. So I get to do a rotation in sports nutrition working with athletes, which is super cool. So after that, you then can sit for the RD national board. So that's basically like your ticket into taking the boards. You can't take the boards without it. Then you take this board, usually study for like 2 or 3 months, take the boards. And if you pass, then you're a registered dietitian. But actually in 2024, they're requiring a master's degree to sit for the boards. So it's crazy. Ooh, it's not just like, it's a bachelor's, a master's, an internship, and the boards to be a registered dietitian.
That's a lot. Yeah. So, but that makes so much sense because there's so many misleading nutritionists. And then now I'm like, oh gosh, so I actually thought it was the opposite of nutritionist and dietitian. So it's very interesting. I'm learning a lot of new things.
Yeah.
So what should people look for when they're hiring? And I'll stick with that.
So I think that, I would say, hire a registered dietitian and only registered dietitian, but I do think that there are people who are not RDs that are qualified, that have, taken their own measurements or their own measures to understand and to, educate themselves. So what I would say is there's so many, for starters, there's so many fad diets out there. If your nutritionist is putting you on a fad diet or even like a specific meal plan, that's not teaching you anything, right? So you want to work with somebody who's going to teach you how to carry this information in different situations. If I give you a meal plan, which is, this is like the most popular thing, trainers and other nutritionists, they'll give like cookie cutter meal plans. Eat this at this time and this amount. It doesn't teach you anything. When you go out on a vacation or a spontaneous date night, or when life throws curveballs at you, you have no idea what to do. You're like all thrown off. So you want to work with somebody who teaches you how to navigate just to make good choices, right? Depending on your goals. It is different for everybody. So the person next to you should not be getting the exact same plan that you're getting. And I think that, that's something to look at. And there's nothing wrong with asking your coach or your nutritionist or whoever you're working with why they're doing certain things. See if they can provide science as to back it up with science. If they're just giving you a meal plan and being like, I don't know, ask for the science. There should be a reason why they're telling you to do certain things.
Yeah.
And also I will say people love to promote their 3-month transformation. Like, look at my client, this was day one and this is day 90. To me, look at that client in a year or in 2 years. That's what would be impressive to me, because anybody can lose weight by eliminating everything that you love for 30 days or whatever it may be. But that's not impressive to me. I want to see you in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years. Have you sustained that? So I think that asking, or when you're doing your research for a coach, don't just go by the month or two transformation. Ask to see, or see if they post their clients' long-term progress. That's what we're all in it for, the long-term changes.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's fantastic advice. The quick fix thing just drives me nuts. I wish if people could see the podcast, I was rolling my eyes when you were like, yep, the fad diets. And I was like, yeah, it's the worst. Which totally leads us to the next part, which is what common mistakes do you see people making the most? Like, if you were to take a poll of your clients, or even just people you chat with, what mistakes are we making over and over again?
I think that a big one is I see a lot of under eating. People come and they're eating like 1,000, 1,200 calories. And they're like, well, I can't lose any more weight. And they just think lowering it more is the answer, or doing more is the answer. I see a lot of that. I also see people get discouraged when you explain to them that it's going to take time, that it's not just going to be, especially the under eaters, especially, it's going to take time to restore that metabolism and build it back up to a place where, you know, you can see the results that you want to see. So I think it's time. I see a lot of people fixated with the time. And I also see a lot of people just not feeling right and just being petrified of calories, petrified of carbs, petrified of the foods that they love. And I just don't think, I think that always just ends bad.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things. I think that it's so easy, and why a lot of people buy on to programs to start with, and they want that like 2-3 month change. The biggest thing I always see is like lack of consistency, where it's like, if you don't consistently make small steps, then you don't have anything. You can't make these big swings and expect that to stay as they are.
Exactly. People don't want to take the individual steps to get places. People, they get motivated. They, you know, make these goals that are just insane that maybe they do stick to for a week, but then they're not like sustainable because you just jumped like 7 stairs when you should have just taken one step. Take one step, nail down that habit, then take the next step. It's just a slow process, you know? I mean, you have the rest of your life. I don't understand why people are like, I need these results in 30 days. Why? You literally have your entire life to live. The time's going to pass either way.
Yeah, no, that's very true. So what do you see? I think you have strong feelings, as do I. What do you see as the most detrimental fad diets out there?
Which one is the most detrimental fad diet?
Start with that. Or like the top. Yeah.
I think you're already going to know. I like despise keto. It's such a big thing right now, and I don't get it. It's the most unsustainable diet, especially when people mix keto with intermittent fasting. Which a lot of people do. You are talking like two of the most restrictive diets. You're not going to stick with that when you go somewhere. You're not going to stick with that on the weekends. I think people just fear carbs so much. And especially athletic people, like, we need carbs. It's our body's fuel source. I don't know why I see so many people going keto. It blows my mind.
So what about someone though? So it's kind of been big in the endurance world of fat adaptation. What are your thoughts on that component, which is, I consider, a bit different than keto, or quite a bit different?
What do you mean?
So in the endurance world it's more carb cycling, where in order to push into more fat burning, because supposedly that's a more sustainable use of fuel over carbohydrates, that people try to adapt their bodies to utilize fat sources by eating an increase of fat. But I will say, and there are some very successful men who can do this, not women. But I guess where that breaks down for me is that the carb cycle. So yes, they will have moments of going quite low on carbohydrates, but then before big races and things like that, there's almost always a bump in carbohydrates. But I guess, do you know much about like that kind of system or?
Honestly, I like just got into this whole endurance, like sport myself, like with marathon training. I mean, I personally never carb cycled. I would have more carbs on days that I ran more, but I never depleted myself of getting down to like minimal carbs. It's just not, it's never been a system that I've used. I mean, I'd have to look more into it. I don't really know the answer to that question.
Oh, totally fair. It's definitely something that's kind of gone in and out of fashion in some ways and has been proven over and over that women can't do that. So I guess leading into a different question, there's kind of two parts, but how do you see fueling for men and women as different or more similar than we might think?
I think that, you know, people like overcomplicate nutrition so much. I think that depending on your goals, obviously depending on your gender, you're going to require, you're going to have different energy needs, but the science is pretty much the same. Carbohydrates have a role, fats have a role, protein have a role. Those levels will change depending on your activity level, your gender. But other than that, I mean, they're pretty similar principles, right? Like I feel, you know, men have more muscle on them. They just burn more calories throughout the day. They normally have a faster metabolism than women because of their, you know, their increased muscle. They're going to need more calories. And they're going to need more protein because they have more muscle. But it's not, I think that it's the same kind of principles, no matter what the gender is. Does that gotcha. Kind of make sense?
It absolutely does. I mean, that was kind of a leading question because I think women are programmed to think they always need to eat less than men.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, everyone is individual.
Right. Everybody is individual. I can't tell you how many times I clean Alex's plate. My boyfriend's plate. I'm like, you're gonna finish that? He's like you do not need to eat less than a, like, it depends, and each day is different too. You know, you could be like starving that day, you just ran a ton today or yesterday or whenever, and you're just more hungry. Then honor those hunger cues, eat more than your man, it's fine.
I love that. I feel like that should be the title of this podcast, eat more than your man.
Yeah, it's fine.
I love that. So as you're getting into your endurance journey, and we'll go more into that, how have you found your nutritional needs shifting? And then how would you work with, say, a more endurance-based athlete versus someone who is more into lifting and CrossFit-y? I mean, CrossFit's very aerobic-based in many ways, but kind of that differentiation, or is there much of a differentiation?
I think that the difference between endurance and like purely weightlifting is the intra activity fueling. So in endurance, to fuel dirt. We're lifting for 2 hours or an hour. I mean, maybe you might have a shake or some sort of gummy bears or something to kind of give you a little fuel during the workout, but endurance, it is vital. Obviously, you know, you need to fuel throughout a marathon, throughout a half marathon, even a 10 mile run. You have to fuel, you have to hydrate, you have to watch your electrolyte levels. It's just a much longer, you know, event than a 1 to 2 hour lifting session. So I find that that's the main difference in fueling for the two. I do think obviously eating enough for both sports is very important for recovery, for performance. But I would say from personal experience, I eat more when I do, like when I was marathon training, I was eating more because it was such long runs. You'd fuel, you'd consume calories throughout it before and after.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you see metabolic changes in, say, like an athlete who's very conditioned in endurance versus someone who's just starting to get into it? Like, will the metabolic needs shift if someone's kind of practiced it a lot, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, well, I wouldn't say that they would really change. No, okay. I would say if you're running 20 miles, you need, you're going to need the same amount of fuel when you start than when you end.
Okay.
I think, I mean, if that makes, I don't yeah. think that you like adapt to.
So, okay.
Yeah, I think that fueling is equally as important no matter how conditioned you are.
Yeah, because sometimes I feel like I have just less needs because I've done it for so long that there's yeah. some adaptation that's happened that I'm just not as, I'm maybe not as calorie dependent in many ways as I need to be, or I've reduced the amount of calories that I'm burning. But would you agree with that or probably not?
I would say that you're probably, your body's probably adapting to that amount of training, meaning you're probably just not feeling the effects as much.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, like your body's not taking it as hard, and maybe I still think that fueling is equally as important for a newbie to a, you know, somebody who's been doing it for such a long time. I just think that your body has adjusted to feeling that type of way. So maybe you're not feeling like you need the calories for recovery, but you do.
Interesting. That's really good advice for, I think, a lot of us who think, oh, well, you know, I'm fine. I don't really need to. I've probably just adapted. But it's like, no, you're just adapted to not feeling as bad about not getting it.
Exactly. Because I think if you cut your calories, you know, if you've been doing it for a while and you're like, oh, I don't need them anymore, now you're risking injury. Now you're risking, you know, like dehydration. Now you're just risking risk factors, I think, by decreasing calories when you're comfortable with it. I think that it's just as important. I think that fueling is just always important, no matter what sport, no matter how long you've been doing it, just to optimize performance and recovery.
Awesome. Yeah. I think it's becoming so much more prevalent in us realizing how important it is. It's like, no, this is more important than the run itself in so many yeah. ways.
And I think yeah. that by fueling properly, you get more out of your workout. So, and that's a big thing I say with under eaters. If you can eat a little bit more, you're going to have more energy to give in your workout, meaning you're going to expend more energy and burn more calories. So if you can, you know, fuel your run so you can get more out of your run, maybe run a little faster, a little harder, thanks to the fuel that you're giving yourself, you know, the long-term result, the end result there is going to be better than if you were depriving it the whole time.
Definitely. So for someone, because under eating, I think, is incredibly common in especially the female endurance world. How do you take someone who is under eating and bring them to a healthier level? Like, what does that look like for a process?
Yeah. So actually, this is like my ideal client. I love working with an under eating female who works out a ton, is doing too much and not eating enough, because it's like life changing. Like, I just love working with them. So what I do is I put them through a reverse diet. So like today, somebody came to me and she was eating like around 1,000 calories, and she works out 5 days a week. So, and she feels that she's plateaued. So right here, you can see that you can't decrease calories anymore. There's just no room to decrease under 1,000. And you really, I mean, you're already working out 5 days a week. So what to do next? So the next step would be a reverse diet. So a reverse diet is just strategically increasing calories up to a nice baseline where your body's going to function optimally. So a lot of people get petrified with this concept, but if it's done right, you know, you should, for the most part, be able to kind of minimize weight gain throughout the process. So it's always slow is the way to go. So somebody eating like 1,000 calories, I'll start with bumping them up to either 1,050 calories or 1,100 calories, and let them hang out there for 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, depending on how they're feeling mentally and physically. And then once they kind of stabilize there, we bump them up another 50 to 100, let them stabilize there. So this way, it's a strategic way to let the body kind of adapt to each adjustment. So instead of just going from 1,000 calories to 1,800 calories, where you're mentally and physically probably just going to feel awful, you're letting your mind and your body adjust with each increase. So, you know, I normally will keep protein pretty much the same, and I'll just adjust fats and carbs. So carbohydrates store water. So the natural thing that's going to happen is the scale will jump when we increase carbs. And normally people freak out, but I'm like, just give it a little time. After a couple of days of adjusting at this new carbohydrate number, the weight normally will go back down because your body's now adjusted to this. And I mean, maybe you do gain a couple pounds and that's okay, but you need to get your body up to a point where it's going to feel safe and function optimally before you can even think about, you know, wanting to lose weight. So if I can adjust them over weeks and months up to a comfortable level, depending on what that is for them, depending on their activity level, their gender. But I'm thinking most people are above 1,800, 18, 2,000, or even more for really active people. And then we'll hang out there for a few months, depending on how long they underate for. It could be 6 months. It could be 8 months. Like, it's not a quick process. You need to restore your metabolism. Undereating slows the metabolism. The only way to increase your metabolism is by eating more to get it going. So now we'll hang out at this maintenance for however long we need to. So now when we put their body intentionally into a deficit, it's going to respond at a, you know, not a starving number amount of calories. We can now drop them to like 1700, and it's going to respond the way that we want it to respond without them feeling like I'm starving. And then there's, you know, two ways that I will increase a deficit. It's either decreasing calories a little bit or increasing cardio a little bit. And then once I'll usually do like 1 to 3 adjustments of each, of cardio and of lowering calories, depending on the person. I never want anybody to be starving, so I'm never going to drop them to a level where they're like, I'm ravenous, like this is horrible. It's just not worth it at that point. Maybe we'll increase cardio. Maybe we'll reverse out of the deficit. So the whole point of, you know, reversing up is to get to that point where then your body will respond to a deficit. If you choose you want to go into a deficit, we'll do that for maybe 12 to 14 weeks. But then reversing back up after that deficit is just as important as that deficit phase. So now the idea is that you say you go through your deficit and you lose 15 pounds. Now you're at this new low weight of, I don't know, say you were 155 and you got down to 140. Now you start to slowly increase after the deficit, and you should maintain around 140, but get those calories back up to your maintenance level. Gaining 2 or 3 pounds is normal. 5 pounds is normal. But now you're going to be up at that maintenance level calories in the 2000s, hopefully, at that new low weight. So then you hang out there for a while. And if you choose you want to do another deficit, if you're not where you want to be body composition wise, you're starting that deficit at that low weight that you ended the last deficit in.
Right.
That's going to make sense.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah. That's
it's like a whole process, but I love it.
Yeah. That's really helpful to walk through. And I think demystifies a lot of how this process works. Yeah. Because I know so many women that are like, oh, I'm at 1200 calories or 1000. Like, so you're absolutely miserable and hate everything. And they're like, yeah, and I can't lose any more weight. And then yep. A lot of that leads into unhealthy eating patterns. And you sure you see it every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I love, like, you know, when they get calories up, they have more food freedom. So they're not stressing out about social events anymore. They're not feeling the need to go all in because they have more room to work with in their day. They're also feeling way more energized. Like one of my clients today, we're reversing her up, and she's like, I asked to explain a win from the week. And she's like, I have been using way heavier weights in my workout class and I feel great. And I'm like, that's amazing. Like, you are doing so much more because you have so much more energy to use.
Yeah.
So it's just such people don't understand how good they can feel if they fuel themselves adequately.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I really appreciate you explaining that. that process. Well, let's see. With Zoom, I'm always like, don't cut out. But we still have a few more minutes. So what, you mentioned a little bit, but what are you training for and how is that going right now?
It's good. So I'm training for my first half Ironman.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I'm like a total newbie. Like I have never swam or biked for sport. I've only ran. So I am like brand new at this. It's different, but I really like it. Like I said, I love training for something. I love challenging myself. It's pretty uncomfortable right now because I'm not a good swimmer or a good biker right now, but it makes me excited. You know, it makes me excited to get better. So right now I'm still trying to maintain my weightlifting. So I do that 4 times a week. And then I've been tri training, 6 days a week with 1 complete rest day. So
you're, wow. So you've got to be really fueling. Your nutrition has to be on point.
I am. I need to recover good. I need to, you know, I need to optimize fueling and recovery. It's so important.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so cool. Also, I think it says a lot about your character of being free to try something new, because so many people are so terrified of being beginners.
Yeah.
And you embrace that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Like I was definitely like the first time in the pool, I was like very intimidated, but I just kept telling myself like, step out of your comfort zone. I tell everybody step out of your comfort zone. Like that's where the magic happens. I need to do that too. So, you know, I just go in the pool and I'm no shame. Like when people give me advice, if they see something, the people at the pool are so friendly that people just will like offer advice because they can probably tell I'm a newbie. And I'm like, embrace it. I'm like, yes, please help me. Give me the advice. You know, I mean, just like I would be if I saw somebody in the gym having no idea what they were doing, I'd go up and help them, give them advice. You know, everybody has their things that they're good at and that they're not good at. And I think that that's, I think that that's the great thing that I've seen a lot about like the fitness industry, or people are pretty supportive. Yeah. You know, like it's pretty rare that you go to a gym and you see people like making fun of people, at least the gyms that I'm at. You know, people are always pretty open to supporting you, bettering yourself and giving you tips and making you feel comfortable. I think that that's like the beauty of this fitness industry too.
I totally agree. I can't wait till you get into ultras because that community is awesome.
Imagine.
It's imagine. Yeah, we all just like run a lot and eat snacks. That's basically ultras.
I am there for the snacks.
So wrapping up with a few fun questions, and I need to stop kneeling in that chair because it's making a weird noise. If you could do any bucket list race or event, what would it be?
Okay, so this sounds crazy, but like, and I don't think I could do it, but my boyfriend is always like, I know you'll do it. I think it'd be so badass to just do a full Ironman.
Yeah.
I don't think like, I mean, I'm only half Ironman training and I'm dying a little bit. So I'm like, no way. But this is how it all started. I started with a 10 miler and then I was like, let's do the half marathon. Let's do the marathon. Let's do the half iron. Like it always just the next thing. I think it'd be so badass to do a full Ironman, but that's so much. It's a lot.
You should do it. You absolutely should do it. That would be so cool. I'm with Alex. I believe that you absolutely will do it at some point too.
You can ask me after I finish my first half and see how that goes.
Sounds good. Okay. Second question. Do you, or if you could do a workout or coach the nutrition of any person dead or alive, who would it be?
Coach anybody?
Or like go for a run or a bike or something.
Oh, it is. It's The Rock.
The Rock. You are, I think, the second person to say that.
I love The Rock. And I feel like he eats so much. It'd be so fun to do his nutrition. Have you ever seen his nutrition?
I've seen his cheat meals and I've seen it like his normal nutrition as well. Yeah. I would throw up off of like an eighth of it.
It's so much food, but I think it would just be so fun to like plan for him and You'd have like all the freedom. You could put anything in there. Anything fits in like an 8,000 calorie day.
That is a fantastic answer. I love that. And then last question before we go to where people can find you. What is your favorite? Normally we put like, what's your favorite post long run or post race meal, but I actually know that you generally can't eat after long events. So just in general, what's one of your favorite meals?
I love more than anything French fries. It's not a meal, but I love it. Like, I will never not eat a French fry if it's there. I wanted to start an Instagram called Eyes on the Fries and do a French fry review of all the fries.
Absolutely need to do that. And this cracks me up because two nights ago we were in Sonoma at an Italian restaurant and Cody ordered a plate of French fries. He was like,
that's my cousin.
Yep. Absolutely. You two are so related.
Yep. They're my favorite. They're my favorite food ever. I love them. That's and so awesome. Then anything with fries, you know, like okay. That would be my favorite meal, something with fries. And I don't want the sweet potato fries. I want the regular fried fries.
I love this. That's awesome. Cody's going to get such a kick out of this when he listens. Awesome. Well, Gina, where can people find you on social media, online, and are you accepting new clients?
I am. So you can find me on my Instagram. It's nutrition_with_Gina. You can either shoot me a message there or you can go to my website, nutritionwithgina.com, and submit a form that will go to my email. And I am accepting new clients right now. Probably I'm guessing when I start my internship in the fall, I may put that not on a pause. I'll probably slow it down a little bit, but, right now I'm definitely in full swing of accepting applications. Awesome. I mean, I'm working with people.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for, coming on and chatting. This was a blast and secretly just a way that forced us to have a conversation.
I know, this is so fun. Thank you for having me on.